You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on the Shortness of Life. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on the Shortness of Life. Life is long if you know how to use it, by Seneca. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. It is not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste a lot of it. Life is long enough, and a sufficiently generous amount has been given to us for the highest achievements, if it were all well invested. But when it is wasted in heedless luxury and spent on no good activity, we are forced at last, by death's final constraint, to realize that it has passed away before we knew it was passing. So it is. We are not given a short life, but we make it short. And we are not ill-supplied, but wasteful of it. Just as when ample and princely wealth falls to a bad owner, it is squandered in a moment, but wealth, however modest, if entrusted to a good custodian, increases with use, so our lifetime extends amply if you manage it properly. End quote. That is Seneca from On the Shortness of Life. This is our second note featuring Seneca's wisdom. Check out our notes on Letters from a Stoic for more. And while you're at it, check out our growing collection of old-school classics and Stoic wisdom, both of which are linked in the note. Seneca was born around the time of Jesus in the ancient city of Cordoba, which at the time was the most prominent city in ancient Spain. He was a Roman statesman and tutor of Nero, who is one of history's most prominent Stoic philosophers, along with Marcus Aurelius and Epictetus. He is credited as the originator of the essay and is an extraordinarily lucid, compelling writer, sharing timeless wisdom with remarkable power. This book is not an easy read. It's not a book you pick up when you're feeling tired or looking for a refreshing break. It's a book you read early in the morning, when you're feeling energized and ready to chat with one of the world's master teachers. At least, that's how I approached it. The book is composed of three long essays on the shortness of life, Consolation to Helvia, which is a remarkable letter Seneca wrote to his mother to console her regarding his exile, and on tranquility of mind. Entire pages of my copy are underlined with wows. I'm excited to share a few of my favorite ideas we can apply to our lives today, so let's jump in. First big idea. Seneca says, today's the day. Quote, can anything be more idiotic than certain people who boast of their foresight? They keep themselves officiously preoccupied in order to improve their lives. They spend their lives in organizing their lives. They direct their purposes with an eye to a distant future. But putting things off is the biggest waste of life. It snatches away each day as it comes and denies us the present by promising the future. The greatest obstacle to living is expectancy, which hangs upon tomorrow and loses today. You are arranging what lies in fortune's control and abandoning what lies in yours. What are you looking at? To what goal are you straining? The whole future lies in uncertainty. Live immediately. Listen to the cry of our greatest poet, who, as though inspired with divine utterance, sings salutary verses. Life's finest day for wretched mortals here is always first to flee. Why do you linger, he means? Why are you idle? If you don't grasp it first, it flees. And even if you do grasp it, it will still flee. So you must match time's swiftness with your speed in using it. And you must drink quickly, as though from a rapid stream that will not always flow. In Chastising Endless Delay 2, the poet very elegantly speaks not of the finest age, but finest day. However greedy you are, why are you so unconcerned and so sluggish, while time flies so fast, extending months and years in a long sequence ahead of you? The poet is telling you about the day, and about this very day that is escaping. So can it be doubted that for wretched mortals, that is, the preoccupied, the finest day is always the first to flee. End quote. That's from the essay from which the book got its title, Life is Short for Those Who Don't Know How to Use It. If you're wasting your time getting ready to live or frittering your time away on useless preoccupations, life will appear very short. But not if you live with a sense of perspective on just how few days you have left. Seneca tells us, you must match time's swiftness with your speed in using it, and you must drink quickly as though from a rapid stream that will not always flow. In other words, you must live with a sense of grounded urgency. As we discuss in Masterpiece Days 101, today is the day. It's our finest day and always the first to flee. Let's drink swiftly and make today amazing. Next big idea, been exiled lately? Quote, whatever is best for a human being lies outside human control. It can be neither given nor taken away. The world you see, nature's greatest and most glorious creation, and the human mind which gazes and wonders at it, there are our own everlasting possessions and will remain with us as long as we ourselves remain. So, eager and upright, let us hasten with bold steps wherever circumstances take us, and let us journey through any countries whatever. There can be no place of exile within the world, since nothing within the world is alien to men. End quote. That's from the essay called Consolation to Helvia, Seneca's truly remarkable letter to his mother after being exiled from Rome by Nero. The letter captures the essence of the Stoic philosophy. Whatever is best for a human being lies outside human control. It can neither be given nor taken away. In other words, we possess within ourselves the greatest treasure, our ability to choose our response to any situation. This is how Seneca consoles his grieving mother, by telling her in essence, don't worry, I'm good. Yeah, I'm no longer good in Rome and I miss you too, but know that they can't take away my power to appreciate life, and I've never been happier. Seriously, he ends the letter with this, quote, so this is how you must think of me, happy and cheerful, as if in the best of circumstances, for they are best, since my mind, without any preoccupation, is free of its own tasks, now delighting in more trivial studies, now in its eagerness for the truth, rising up to ponder its own nature and that of the universe, end quote. These days, we'd call that some really powerful cognitive reframing, which is at the heart of cognitive behavioral therapy. We need to be able to accept our current circumstances as they are, and then see how we can reinterpret them in a more empowering way. Seneca is a boss at this. Total boss. How about you? Were you a leading statesman on the top of your game, working with the most powerful people in the world, and then get exiled? Eek. Or perhaps you experienced your own minor or major setback recently that's still burning. Think about it. And think about how you can see the good in whatever happened. How has your life improved as a direct result of that challenge? How has it made you stronger? How are you anti-fragile? Developing the capacity to reappraise whatever happens to us is one of the most powerful aids to our growth. It's a really wise skill to build. It's also the essence of Ryan Holiday's Stoic-based book, The Obstacle is the Way. Those notes might be worth a read or reread. Little PS here, Seneca begins the letter to his mother by telling her that he doesn't want to distract her from her grief, but help her conquer her grief. After eloquently prefacing his wisdom, he goes on to remind her of all the pain she has experienced in her life up to this point, from losing her mother in her own birth to a number of other tragic experiences. He does this not to bring more pain to her life, but to remind her that she is an extraordinarily strong woman who has gained strength with every difficulty she has risen beyond. Same with you and me. We've been through a lot in our lives. Those things that have not killed us can, if we choose to let them, important distinction, make us stronger. Let's appreciate our strength and use it for our current and future challenges. Little PPS here, Jocko Willink, Navy SEAL author of Extreme Ownership, see those notes, has a one-word response to everything that ever happens to him. Good. Imagine that. Whatever happens, you say to yourself, good. I love that so much, I've got it up on my whiteboard and it's become something of a mantra for me. Good. Next big idea, nothing happens to the wise against their expectation. Quote, thus, I shall sail unless something happens, and I shall become praetor unless something prevents me, and my business will be successful unless something interferes. That is why we say that nothing happens to the wise man against his expectation. We remove him not from the chances that befall mankind, but from their mistakes. Nor do all things turn out for him as he wished, but as he reckoned. And above all, he reckoned that something could block his plans. But inevitably, the mind can cope more easily with the distress arising from disappointed longings if you have not promised it certain success. End quote. Nothing happens to the wise person against her expectation. Why? She's anticipated that things may go wrong, and because of that, not only is she better prepared to handle the inevitable setbacks, she's much more likely to actually get what she wants. Gabriel Oettingen tells us that's not just beautiful ancient wisdom, it's a modern scientific fact. As she tells us in Rethinking Positive Thinking, check out those notes, based on 2 decades of research findings, replicated across a variety of research participants, contexts, and methods, you would be ill-advised to indulge in dreams about achieving your goals and then assume you're well on your way to success. Life just doesn't work that way. What do we got to do? We got to remember to whoop. Get clear on what you want, your wish, and get fired up about the benefits you will experience, the outcome. Then consider what might get in the way, obstacles, and figure out what you'll do to get around them when/if they arise, our plan. Seneca would have been a critic of the self-help culture's obsession with pure fantasy positive thinking. I'm certain he would have been a fan of whoop. Are you? P.S. Practically speaking, what's your number one goal these days? What do you want? Why? What might get in the way? And what will you do to navigate those obstacles? Awesome. Next big idea, flexibility is the key to tranquility. Quote, we should also make ourselves flexible so that we do not pin our hopes too much on our set plans and can move over to those things to which chance has brought us without dreading a change in either our purpose or our condition, provided that fickleness, that fault most inimical to tranquility, does not get hold of us. For obstinacy, from which fortune often extorts something, is bound to bring wretchedness and anxiety, and much more serious is the fickleness that nowhere restrains itself. Both are hostile to tranquility and find change impossible and endurance impossible. End quote. That's from the essay on tranquility, as is the prior big idea. Know this, tranquility comes from flexibility. We need to have a clear sense of what we want and be willing to push through obstacles. If we go from thing to thing to thing, we're not being virtuously flexible. We're being what he calls fickle. That's a vice of not enough commitment. And if we just grind away in the same exact way, ignoring all the feedback that we might want to adapt a bit, we're not being virtuous either. That's a vice of excess commitment he calls obstinacy. Flexibility is right in the middle, our virtuous mean. We're committed and willing to adapt. So, how are you fickle? How are you obstinate? And how can you be more flexible? Remember that flexibility is a key to tranquility. Next big idea, our minds must relax. Quote, the mind should not be kept continuously at the same pitch of concentration, but given amusing diversions. Our minds must relax. They will rise better and keener after a rest. Just as you must not force fertile farmland, an uninterrupted productivity will soon exhaust it. So constant effort will sap our mental vigor, while a short period of rest and relaxation will restore our powers. Unremitting effort leads to a kind of mental dullness and lethargy. End quote. Now, although I'm personally pretty good at shutting down at the end of the day and on weekends, this is one of my top weaknesses, thinking, or at least wishing, I can go hard all the time. Alas, it doesn't work that way. Our minds must relax. As Seneca tells us, quote, just as you must not force fertile farmland, as uninterrupted productivity will soon exhaust it, so constant effort will sap our mental vigor, while a short period of rest and relaxation will restore our powers. Note here, if your weakness lies on the other side of effort, meaning you don't put in enough, remember, quote, there is a big difference between slackening your hold on something and severing the link. In other words, you've got to be willing to work hard, just bake in waves of good recovery. There's no virtue in either the vice of excess hard work or the vice of deficiency of hard work. So, how do we best relax? As it happens, I was just working on a Willpower 101 class I'm prepping for and reviewing my notes on the willpower instinct. Kelly McGonigal makes a really important point about effective and not so effective ways to let our minds relax. She tells us, quote, "While many of the most popular stress relief strategies fail to make us feel better, some strategies really work. According to the American Psychological Association, the most effective stress relief strategies are exercising or playing sports, praying or attending a religious service, reading, listening to music, spending time with friends or family, getting a massage, going outside for a walk, meditating or doing yoga, and spending time with a creative hobby. The least effective strategies are gambling, shopping, smoking, drinking, eating, playing video games, surfing the internet, and watching TV or movies for more than 2 hours." End quote. Why is that? Well, Kelly continues by telling us, "The main difference between the strategies that work and the strategies that don't, rather than releasing dopamine and relying on the promise of reward, the real stress relievers boost mood-enhancing brain chemicals like serotonin and GABA, as well as the feel-good hormone oxytocin. They also help shut down the brain's stress response, reduce stress hormones in the body, and induce the healing relaxation response. Because they aren't exciting like the dopamine releasers, we tend to underestimate how good they will make us feel. And so we forget about these strategies not because they don't work, but because when we're stressed, our brains persistently mispredict what will make us happy. This means that we'll often talk ourselves out of doing the very thing that will actually make us feel better." End quote. In other words, quit jacking yourself up with more stimulation. More dopamine-releasing internet surfing, video games, etc. isn't going to do the trick. Go for a walk, meditate, get a massage, play with your kids, go play your favorite sport, have a list of what truly renews your mind and soul, and go do that. Knowing A, you need it, and B, you'll come back feeling better than ever. All of that leads us to our final big idea, stoic anti-fragility. Quote, "In any case, the mind must be recalled from external objects into itself. It must trust in itself, rejoice in itself, admire its own things. It must withdraw as much as possible from the affairs of others and devote its attention to itself. It must not feel losses and should take a kindly view even of misfortunes. When a shipwreck was reported and he heard that all his possessions had sunk, our founder, Zeno, said, 'Fortune bid me a less encumbered philosopher.' When a tyrant threatened to kill the philosopher Theodorus, and indeed to leave him unburied, he replied, 'You can please yourself, and my half pint of blood is in your power. But as to burial, you are a fool if you think it matters to me whether I rot above or below ground.'" Julius Canus, an outstandingly fine man, whom we can admire even though he was born in our age, had a long dispute with Gaius. And as he was going away, that Phalaris said to him, "In case you are deluding yourself with foolish hopes, I have ordered you to be led off to execution." His reply was, "I thank you, noble emperor." End quote. How's that for a few more examples of stoic anti-fragility? Imagine losing everything, in a shipwreck no less, and responding with this, "Fortune bids me a less encumbered philosopher." Or being ordered to be executed by a tyrant and replying, "I thank you, noble emperor." Yeah. James Stockdale captured his version of this stoic wisdom in his extraordinary book, Courage Under Fire. See those notes, where he chose to play the role assigned to him as well as he could. That role? Ranking officer in a prison of war camp. Viktor Frankl, of course, played his role in a concentration camp remarkably well and wrote about it in Man's Search for Meaning. So back to you again. How are you replying to life's challenges? Remember to practice with the tiny things to build strength for the big ones. Here's to the strength of mind and character that allows us to live with tranquility in the midst of life's challenges. That is a super quick look at this great book, On the Shortness of Life by Seneca. Learn more about him on Wikipedia. If you enjoyed this note, I think you'll enjoy the notes on Letters from a Stoic, also by Seneca, Meditations by Aurelius, The Enchiridion by Epictetus, Courage Under Fire by Stockdale, and A Guide to the Good Life, plus The Obstacle is the Way, all of which are linked in the note. Now, let's enjoy some great quotes from the sidebar and wrap it up. All of these are from Seneca. He tells us, but if each of us could have the tally of his future years set before him, as we can of our past years, how alarmed would be those who saw only a few years ahead, and how carefully would they use them? Often, a very old man has no other proof of his long life than his age. Ouch. He also tells us, if a man stirs himself to face the worst of disasters and defeats, the evils which overwhelm others, then he wears those very sorrows like a sacred badge. For we are naturally disposed to admire more than anything else the man who shows fortitude in adversity. He who fears death will never do anything worthy of a living man. So let all of your activity be directed to some object. Let it have some end in view. Mark off, I tell you, and review the days of your life. You will see that very few, the useless remnants, have been left to you. And finally, Seneca tells us, so there you have the means of preserving your tranquility, the means of restoring it, and the means of resisting the faults that creep up on you unawares. But be sure of this, that none of them is strong enough for those who want to preserve such a fragile thing, unless the wavering mind is surrounded by attentive and unceasing care. In other words, you got to stay strong moment to moment to moment and practice these ideas if you want to see sustained change. I hope you enjoyed this quick look at this great book. And if you're feeling up to it, dive in. Letters from a Stoic is a little bit more approachable than this one, but they're both fantastic. And I look forward to sharing more. What was your favorite big idea? What jumped out? What resonated? How are you going to make it a bigger part of your life? Have fun with that. Have another awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.